Hello and welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle. Here we discuss some real news. It is fair to say the United States has lost its mind over the issue of Israel, and in the process, the America First movement has shown itself to be a fraud. Also, remembering history, why has D-Day become more important in the West than Victory Day in Europe? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Goggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And in Marrakesh, we have Martin Jay. He is an award-winning journalist and commentator. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start off with George in Budapest. America has lost its mind, as I said in the introduction. I mean, we have major infringements being prepared to undermine the First Amendment. We have members of Congress that want to put student protesters on no-fly list. Even one lunatic wants to send them to Gaza. Then we have to impeach Biden for the same reason. Again, this is a kind of a parody of themselves. You know, they're using the same rationale that they impeached Donald Trump. In this case, it's America's most important ally. Never explained why that is, but that's what's said all the time. I could go on and on, George. The place is coming apart at the seams over a foreign country.
Yes, Peter, it is quite extraordinary. And on top of that, we had the spectacle of a few days ago of the president of the United States, a Democrat, the Speaker of the House, number three in line to the throne, both at this Holocaust commemoration event, and both spoke about the United States as being in the grip of an anti-Semitic fervor, the likes of which the world has not seen since Nazi Germany. In fact, they're saying that that's it, what's going on at the university campuses, which is the most elite universities in the United States. You know, the children of the best families are there. So what's going on there is what was going on in Nazi Germany. I mean, they're saying this with a straight face. And the people, of course, go on repeating it. The media, of course, acts as an echo chamber. And you think this is quite extraordinary that they could believe anything so absurd. And then on top of that, we had the other day, the State Department published a sheepish report in which it pretty much said Israel is committing war crimes using American weapons. I mean, it effectively says that, but we don't have definitive proof of this. So therefore, everything can continue as before.
George, but you can watch those atrocities in real time being streamed. Yes. I mean, do you need a State Department report? I don't. Okay, I believe my eyes. Keep going.
Exactly, but that was already too much, because although the State Department says yes, so we can go on sending Israel all the arms at once because we just don't have definitive proof that American arms are being misused. That was enough to cause an explosion among Republicans that this is, you know, tying the hands of our greatest friend and ally in all the world. And you have to think, we were told that somehow things had changed. The Republican Party had changed. It had abandoned all of those crazy ideas of the early part of the 21st century, all the George W. Bush, Cheney, and all that. Oh, it's all gone. You know, we're all Trumpians now. We're all realists now. We're all nationalists, populists. And it's exactly the same. It's just this complete lunatic, demented desire to go to war, as you say, on behalf of a foreign country without ever any explanation as to why. What is so special about this foreign country?
Yeah, and then, Martin, we had that letter to the ICC, which, you know, the United States always supported when it when the ICC was going after leaders and adversaries against the United States. And now we have this letter going out from the Senate. I mean, it could have been written by the Soprano family. You've been warned. That's a quote to the ICC. What's going on, Martin?
Yeah, do you believe any of it, though? I mean, you know, it's you say that.
Well, these are very powerful people. I mean, irrespective of their intellect, okay, they do have power.
No, I think, look, you say that the America seems to have lost its mind. I'm not sure it's lost its mind. It's certainly lost any sort of moral or rational compass. We do seem to see, we're witnessing statements and policy decisions and initiatives which seem to be contradicting one another. You know, you've got a senator who once lobbied for aid to not be sent to Gaza, to now we want to impeach Biden because Biden's now apparently blocking the aid. You know, it doesn't really make any sense. The report that George mentions, you know, it, again, you know, incoherent completely. A slap on the wrist, barely a slap on the wrist. Why do you need to write that report? To just tick a box, you know, to convince a gullible public that we are doing something about Gaza. But, you know, sending bombs there and building floating platoons for aid, you know, at the same time, feeding the Gazans and murdering them and allowing the Israelis to corral them into a corner, you know, which was supposedly a safe zone before they are obliterated. You know, Gaza is an ethnic cleansing strategy now, and it always has been, really, you know, and the only thing that is coherent, which rings true every now and again, which we see, is America's inability to play fair in Israel and Palestine. It never plays fair. It always plays dirty, you know, and if you're confused about all of these things going on, it's okay, because we've got Hillary Clinton to demystify it for you. You know, this wonderful video clip that she put out a few days ago, you know, rambling on about the Palestinians, you know, like they're some kind of subhuman clan, you know, in the same way that some people describe insects. You know, the Palestinians were given this opportunity.
But also we had Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Say at one point, I mean, I expect that kind of nonsense from Hillary Clinton.
Total nutter.
He said the Palestinians are some of the most pampered people in the world. George, what's going on here? I mean, why this reaction? I mean, this is just fanatical reaction. It's out of fear, and also the realization that the mask has fallen off, and everyone sees how ugly these policies are, and they desperately don't want people to see reality. They're terrified. That's why they want to send students to Gaza. They want to put them on no-fly lists. I mean, there's been no violence that I'm aware of that's been committed by any of these students who are either at commencement or after commencement. George.
That's exactly right, Peter. There's no evidence whatsoever. No one has produced any evidence that any of these students have committed any violence. The one incident that's constantly referenced, and it was referenced by Speaker Johnson, it was about this young woman who was poked in the eye with a Palestinian flag. And this has then been repeated by all the politicians. And then it turned out, you know, this young woman, of course, did the rounds on television. There was nothing wrong with her eye. I mean, she looks perfectly normal. Looks like any normal, healthy young woman. She said, well, I've got a little bit of a headache. So, you know, and it's clear that all of these cases arise when essentially pro-Israeli student activists deliberately go out of their way to provoke pro-Palestinian demonstrators in the hope of causing a confrontation, in the hope of causing some kind of a melee, which can then be filmed, which can then be sent out to the television stations, and they say, wow, look at this rabid anti-Semitism. And we're now passing legislation, you know, saying, well, this anti-Semitic wave is so dangerous, is such a threat to students that we need you know, very stringent legislation.
Yeah, but the people that are, it's the elites that feel threatened by the students.
Well, because that's right. And the reason they feel threatened is that you can't deny what's going on there. I mean, it's like you can keep repeating October the 7th till the cows come home, but just even look at the numbers. Yeah. I mean, how, you know, the wild disproportion of the numbers just puts a lie to that somehow there was nothing that happened before October the 7th, and then nothing happens after October the 7th, and therefore we can just simply keep repeating October 7th, Nazi Germany, Holocaust, and hope that no one's going to ask any questions.
Well, Martin, what's even more bizarre here is the talking about how certain students, particularly Jewish students, feel threatened or they could be triggered. You know, I don't know the woke lingo as well as others do. But at the same time, when these claims are being made, a slaughter is going on nonstop in Gaza. And I mean, so you talk something that's imagined and then you want to deny reality. Martin.
Yeah. And I think the Americans and the Israelis want to deny reality as much as they possibly can and manipulate the press. I think it was very interesting to see in the last few days an interview with Piers Morgan and one of the official Israeli spokespersons. And Morgan basically cornered this guy because it became apparent that the Israelis don't have any statistics at all for the so-called civilians that they've killed, only statistics on the so-called terrorist, Hamas. And Morgan made the point, look, if you haven't got the statistics on the civilians, then everything you're doing is just basically a fraud. You know, you're just trying to con us, pull the wool over the eyes of everybody, you know, that there is some logic into tracking down these terrorists and killing them.
Well, spokespeople are never really challenged by even, you know, remotely a hard question here. George, before we finish up this segment here, what happened to America First?
That's a very, very good question. America First has come to being America uber alles, a kind of, you know, the America of John McCain. It's an amazing kind of transformation, or maybe it wasn't a transformation. It was, I think, largely a con job to suggest, oh, yeah, America First, yeah, we're not going to worry about anyone else. But that's kind of what John McCain used to say. The last thing we want to do is worry about what the slimy Europeans have to say or what the Asians have to say. We just do whatever we want to do. And so it becomes a full circle. America First is just simply Bush-McCain Republicanism.
Well, where is Donald Trump in all of this? He doesn't seem to be pushing back. I mean, that's what his policy is supposed to be, but I don't see him saying it. Last 30 seconds, George, before we go to the break.
I think Trump is just hoping that this issue will just go away and he can just avoid saying anything or doing anything that's going to antagonize anyone. So he's just simply keeps repeating the same mantra. Hey, it didn't happen when I was president. It wouldn't have happened if I were president. That's all he really says.
Yeah, but, you know, that is the strategy of a coward, not to say anything and hope that the subject will be changed. That's just pure cowardice, unfortunately. But I think the entire political class is cowardice and lack of moral compass, as Martin said here. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT.
Shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
In 1941, with the Nazis' help, Croatian ultranationalists, the Ustashas, proclaimed the independent state of Croatia. Shortly after seizing power, they built the Jasenovac concentration camp, a place associated with the worst atrocities committed in Yugoslavia during World War II. The Ustashas used the camp system to isolate and exterminate Serbs, Roma, Jews, and other non-Catholic minorities and political opponents of their fascist regime. Conditions in the Jasenovac camp were horrendous. The guards tortured, terrorized, and murdered prisoners.
They sent them in concentration camps. So most of them died. It was incredible genocide.
Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle here. We're discussing some real news. Martin, let me go to you. Here in Moscow, we just celebrated Victory Day in Europe, the 79th anniversary. Of course, it's a staple here. It's one of the most important dates on the calendar in Russia for a very good reason. So we really don't know need to go into here. But that date is rapidly disappearing as a date to commemorate in the West. Sure. And I would even go further. You know, the more with every passing year, it's almost as if the Soviet Union, first of all, wasn't in the war, or it was the enemy. But there's very little recognition of its role in the defeat of fascism in Europe in 1945. Martin.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you're picking that up, perhaps because of your generation. But I wonder if younger people really understand that. Even on we are airbrushing this out slowly but gradually, because the elites want us to make no reference to the role that Russia played in the Second World War, as you said, and I think that's a really sad reflection on the direction that we're going. You know, is that if George has mentioned before, previously at last week's show, the elites are managing to basically break down and eradicate and destroy all liberties, all free speech, all debate, and now all reporting. The narrative itself now, history, is being horribly skewered. And why? Because there is this underlying... initiative from the West to basically polarize the world again and go back to the Cold War and have an East and West. This is where we're heading. And this is all part of increased defense spending and basically getting short-term political gains for the elites to stay in power. Not at all very clever long-term gains, of course. You know, where does that leave the hundreds of American companies who invest in China, for example? There's just one take. You know, BRICS is expanding very, very rapidly. And I think it's important now for the Americans and the British to celebrate D-Day, the Normandy landings. But beyond that, you know, we're not going to see much. I mean, in the last week, we had a lot about the Holocaust. You know, I saw on Twitter people talking about how Jewish people are afraid that that we will also forget the Holocaust. And my argument back on Twitter was, how can we forget the Holocaust when the Israelis are reminding us that every single day with the genocide in Gaza? You know, we're never going to forget the Holocaust because people are going to think that, well, that's a repeat of history, isn't it? You know, that's 1945 all the way to where we are today. And this time, you know, the genocide is supported by the Americans. They get a get out of jail free card, you know, and no opprobrium or accountability from any international court. What a joke. You know, even the vote in the UN General Assembly just recently, which seemed to be very encouraging. I think a lot of people drew some solace and comfort from the fact that now Palestine can at least, in principle, consider itself to be a possible state. You know, but that all hinges on the UN Security Council giving it the final vote, and we all know that the Biden administration are going to veto that. However, going back to George's point, Trump, or your point, where does this leave Trump? It puts, I think that's a victory for Trump. Because that puts even more focus on him from the Middle East. You know, the whole of the Middle East is basically waiting for Trump to come back, you know, and not necessarily because they love Trump so much, but they just don't see any mileage at all in the Biden administration. So the big question now could be, if Trump did come back, would he do the unthinkable? Would he press that button?
The thing is that it seems more and more obvious, George, that if Trump comes back, we get John McCain again. I mean, it just, no matter who you vote for, you get John McCain. But, you know, let's say with the topic of history here, George, I mean, it's very interesting is that, I just watched a number of documentaries about the Second World War. They're very old ones, okay? And then I look at the media coverage, whatever coverage there is, and you get the impression that the Americans won the war by invading on D-Day and they liberated the camps. That's kind of the new history.
Yes, that is the history. So you've got a World War II account, which is where you've got Britain, you know, the Battle of Britain defeating Nazi Germany. Then you've got D-Day and then the liberation of Europe. And that's pretty much it. And so the VE Day, which used to be quite a big deal, well, that's kind of now disappeared. And so everybody's waiting with excitement, with bated breath, for the 80th anniversary of the D-Day landings, which is going to be a very big event. It's going to be, you know, commemorated. And again, Russia will then be presented with playing a very minor, if any, role in the whole thing. Whereas, of course, even when it comes to D-Day, the Soviet Union played a very big role because it also, to coincide with D-Day, it mounted a huge offensive, which ultimately led to the total collapse of Nazi Germany. So it played a very big role in D-Day. That Soviet offensive was part of the D-Day planning.
And George, I mean, if you look at the historical record now, you know, it's very difficult to, you know, and when we talk about Ukraine a lot, the conflict there, we don't know. In retrospect, we'll find out if we were at the beginning of the end or the end of the beginning, because you're in the middle of it. But when we look at the history of the Second World War in, you know, 79 years after the defeat of the Nazis, is that it was quite obvious by June 1944, the outcome of the war was certain. The ability for Nazi Germany and its satellites to generate a new major offensive in the east was zero. In the Ardennes later, that was very short term. But I mean, the war was essentially determined. Okay, and now. You know, we have the D-Day landings, and it could have only happened if there because of the Soviet success in the East. Right. Finish up, George.
Yes, exactly. That's right. And what I think is also important that by June 1944, the Western Allies were quite concerned because they knew that a major Soviet victory was in the offing, and they had to thwart that because if they hold back any longer, delay the invasion of Europe any longer, you know, there may not be any need for the Western Allies. You know, the Red Army would just simply, you know, sweep westward without any issues. But even when it comes to after the D-Day landings, the Germans were still concentrating most of their forces in the east rather than the west, because that's what they were afraid of. They were afraid of the Red Army breaking through and occupying the whole of Germany. So they really weren't that worried about the British and the Americans. It was the Soviet breakthrough that concerned them. But what's also interesting is Netanyahu was speaking at the Yad Vashem Museum a few days ago, again, commemorating the Holocaust Remembrance Day. And he said, no one came to the assistance of the Jews. You know, Jews were slaughtered. No one came to the assistance of the Jews. And now this is the thing that it gets repeated over and over again. And you think millions upon millions of people in the Soviet Union died to defeat Nazi Germany. It was they came and they liberated the camps, one camp after another. Was liberated by the Red Army, all of the Auschwitz, Treblinka, everyone was liberated by the Red Army. And you have the nerve to say no one came to our assistance.
Well, you know, the
history has now been completely rewritten.
Yeah, but one of the reasons why it's being rewritten, Martin, is that there is the intent to deny the suffering of the peoples of the Soviet Union in the defeat of Nazi Germany. So if you generate a narrative where you're not there, then if you weren't there, then you didn't suffer. And that's one of the things that they want to avoid. And, you know, I can remember an American woman talking about how the Red Army conquered Hungary. And I pointed out to her, I said, you know, the Red Army lost 600,000 troops to liberate that small country. And you don't want to recognize that. There's this lack of empathy and lack of recognition. And at the end of the day, gentlemen, it's always about security. It's not moralizing. You know, it's easy, rightfully so, to demonize the Nazis. But Stalin or Gorbachev or Putin, it doesn't really matter. They have Russia's security at heart. And there's, again, Russia has no security requirements. Only the West does. When you knock the Soviet Union out of the war, then you reshuffle the deck when it comes to security, even. Martin.
Yeah, I think I do agree with you, but I think, you know, historians and journalists tend to not look too carefully at what George referred to as, you know, the D-Day landings were only really made possible by the defeat of Germany in Russia. The Operation Barbarossa was a colossal, I mean, military failure, a spectacular failure. But why were the Germans, why was Hitler advancing eastward? Mainly to look for more oil. And the main reason why D-Day landings were possible was because at that time of the year, June 1944, the Germans had no real air force to speak of by that time. They basically run out of fuel, and there were not enough pilots around even to fly the few planes they have. Possibly the D-Day landings would have been a very, very different story if the Air Force was still intact and it still had the numbers and the planes to get up there to put up a fight. So I think we need to put it all into context. But, you know, we're not looking at military context. The last thing NATO leaders are doing is looking at Operation Barbarossa and drawing any lessons from it. So, you know, the future is a bleak one. We're all seem to be...
Yeah, but I mean, I'm glad you brought that up, Martin, because that's exactly how the Russians see it, okay? I mean, they see a collective West. They now in this year, in 1941, the U.S. was not already, it wasn't in the war already, but in 2022, you have the complete collective West, okay? And Barbarossa is on their mind, the Russians, that is, George.
That's exactly right. And that's the way they look at it. And they've mentioned this many times before, that essentially Hitler presented them, the Soviets, with a united European continent. And it was pretty much a united European continent. Everyone had been, war resistance had been defeated. Most of the governments of Europe at that time took part in the invasion, you know, whether it was Hungary, yep, or Romania, you know, even France took part. And the Russians are saying, yeah, that's kind of what we've got now, and worse, because we've also got the United States and Great Britain, which at least Britain was not obviously on the side of Hitler in 1941, but they still remember, you know, just a year or two earlier, Great Britain had wanted to attack the Soviet Union.
Unfortunately, gentlemen, we're running out of time, but history doesn't repeat, but it does echo, and we've just proven it on this program. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and in Marrakesh, and of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, Rostock rules.